Welcome to the Future of Healthcare, Live with Intent podcast with Justin Tomlinson and Thomas Reichart, authors of Live with Intent and architects of the LWI Learning Pathway. This week, Thomas and Justin speak with Dr. Monique Optenberg, Pharma International Medical Affairs Competency Lead at Roche. Monique's lived experience has been one of advancing women's health and power. Her next target is increasing equity in the global healthcare system.
So welcome, Monique. Thanks for joining the Live with Intent podcast.
Yes, thanks for inviting me, Justin and Thomas. It's really a privilege to be here and to talk about my passion.
Welcome. It's great. We look forward to spending this time with you.
Thank you.
And Monique, Thomas and I still talk about the story you shared with us about roller skates. And we thought that might be a great way for our audience to get to know a little bit about you and where you're coming from. And maybe that story would be good.
Yeah, sure. It's really a very personal story. And I really had to think back to that story when I was thinking of where comes my passion for women's health and my inner power come from. And maybe I can describe the scene a little bit for the audience. So imagine it's 1970 and it's a very bright day. I'm still at primary school and I'm standing in the middle of a group of schoolboys. And they are yelling at me, shouting at me. They're calling me a fat girl. You're ugly. You're a tomboy. And my heart is pounding like hell, you know. And in my hands, I have my roller skates firmly grasped. And I was thinking, shall I do it? Shall I do it? And when one boy approached me, I did it. I hit him with my roller skates. And I swing them around in that circle. And they really got scared, you know. They said, wow, what's this? And every time when a boy approached me, I took my roller skates and hit them. And then suddenly they dropped off. And you may wonder, how do you get in this kind of situation? And out of the blue, 2 weeks earlier, those schoolboys, they started just to bully me. And they chased me every time after school when I was running from school to home. And sometimes I could hide in the bakery and waited till they left. And I didn't tell that at home, you know. I was raised as a single kid, very independently. My father worked all day. My mother was a housewife, a bit insecure, could not make real decisions, a bit anxious. So I didn't tell this at home. But the baker at one day told my mother that I was hiding almost every day there. And then back at home, my parents, they told me, oh, you must hide every day at the bakery. But I didn't go to school to discuss this with the teachers. But my father, he taught me how to fight those boys. And he gave me that example of using my roller skates. So after this event, the boys never came back. But on the other hand, other girls who apparently were also victims of these schoolboys, they started to call me and say, hey, Monique, come on, here's another fight. Come and help us. So I did. So I became a real street fighter. And at the same time, I was thinking, this is not the only way to move on. And I started to gather them around me and we were discussing how to solve this situation. And we said, well, maybe we could pick one of those boys out of the group and just ask him, why are you doing this? Why us? And so we did that with each of the boys. And suddenly this whole situation just, it was solved somehow. And then I realized, wow, I felt my inner power during that fight, that street fight, my first fight. And I tried also to inspire the other girls at that time, you know, also to feel your strengths and also your attitude just change. You have a certain look and you feel very strong. And so, yeah, I realized, wow, I can do that, but I can also inspire others to have this strength. So that was my first, I think, situation when I started to feel I can do something with my strength and maybe inspire other girls.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. So from rollerblade street fighter to competence lead in Farm International.
Yes, what made exactly. You decide,
what made you decide to go into the farm industry?
Oh, that's also not straight from the beginning, I must say. I have always been interested and fascinated by the functioning of the human body. It was also during primary school. I was that little kid who gave a presentation on pregnancies and birth and how you got pregnant, the technical part of it. And I was 8 or 9, and I don't know why I did this, but I was so fascinating about this story. And it was a good story because afterwards the teacher phoned my mother, where did you get all that information, you know? But I was just, yeah, fascinated by that and drawing the woman's womb on the blackboard. And it has always been like that until I had to decide what to study after high school. And it was not my real calling to become a medical doctor and to heal patients. But again, how does the human body function? And so I started to study medicine. And my favorite topic, of course, became gynecology. And I was working in the hospital as well. But yeah, there I thought becoming a gynecologist every time in a hospital, every time the same, I don't know. I was also fascinated by the drug development because I saw what a medicine did with the patients. So, of course, you have to have the good diagnosis, but the treatment really made a difference. And you never learned how the drugs were developed during university, at least in my time. It was not one of the topics. So I became interested in that. And at the same time, my passion for female health became more clear. And I was very interested to travel to different countries as well. And then on my path came a vacancy for an international medical advisor in women's health at Pharma. It was headquarters Organon, at that time a company at the top of women's health. And that was my first job in Pharma. And so I had everything. I mean, I was working in pharma, learning about drug development, but I could also travel to the nice parts of the world because Latin America and Asia became my my areas. And no one told me how to work with Thai gynecologist or from Malaysia or from Philippines because they're all different. You just went there and experience and tried how you could achieve something. I set up studies there, writing my own protocols. At that time, 6 pages, protocol, study protocol, 6 pages. And I did the randomization by myself on my knees with the coin. And, you know, it's amazing. It's 30 years ago. But at that time, you experience it all by yourself and you learned, okay, how can I treat or can I achieve this in Thailand? How can I achieve this in Philippines? Because they were all different. And it's fascinating to see the different cultures, to learn from them as well, and to see what you could do there, you know, as well for the women at that time. So that was my first experience in pharma. And I worked at that company for 17 years in different roles. I became a medical director when I was 32 in the Netherlands, building the medical department from 6 people to 60 people at that time, because of the, of course, you needed more procedures, you needed more people. And that was also a very good experience to be in the Netherlands and to have this whole perspectives in women health as well. And then in 2006, I became the first medical director again for Roche company where I work now, and also setting up there the medical department. And a total different area, because the main areas they are focused on at that time was oncology. But it was a new challenge, and I liked the new challenges, experiences. So I was a medical director there for 13 years. And 2 years ago, I applied for a new role in the Pharma International environment in the Network Enabling Office for Roche as one of the competency leads. So that's my story.
Thanks, Monique. And where along that journey did it first crystallize, or did you first realize that there is inequality in healthcare?
So it, as my passion, I think it's in my current job. I'm a point of contact again for Asia and Africa, and I didn't have any experience in Africa. And I was talking to one of the medical directors, a woman in Ivory Coast, and she told me that story, which really touched me. So a woman there, if she, for example, has been diagnosed, if she's lucky to have breast cancer, she has to walk to the hospital for 4 hours. In the hospital, she gets the only treatment there is. So it's one treatment for every type of breast cancer. And then she has to go back, but it's dark and she has to sleep in the streets. And then she walks back next day. And that touched me. I said, wow, you can really do something there. Access to medicine in Africa, it's enormous there. And looking also at, for example, the trials that are available, women are still underrepresented in those trials. And I think in the beginning it's logic, because you want to define clearly how a medicine will work. So usually it's male men around 80 that are in trials, but 50% are females. And the female body really is different than a male body. And it's and I was reading, you know, it's not only in the era of they call the bikini, it's not only the reproductive organs and the breasts, but it's the total body acts differently, you know. We have a different robust immune system. We react differently to stress. And many women are underdiagnosed, misdiagnosed, because also doctors, they must realize that we have different symptoms as well. And I think the most important area that has been investigated around this topic is in cardiology, that women really have different symptoms when they have a heart attack. And they keep coming back. And you have to be also strong as a woman that you come back to the doctor every time. And now you see it, I think, again, during this whole COVID situation. I think women, they have they are the foundation of many countries. Huh? They play an important role. They are a mother, they are a partner, they do home education. Sometimes they have also still a function outside their homes. So they are the foundation, and they are hit really by COVID. They also leave their jobs, and yeah, it has an enormous impact on society as a whole. That we don't realize that women have to stay safe also for economy and all the rest.
Yeah, I think it's one thing to know the statistics and to hear the story, but I'm sure it's another thing to actually, you know, be involved, see it firsthand and know these, look into those eyes of people and see where the inequality is. We understand you, Monique, as someone that really believes this can be bridged and that there can be a difference.
If I look at someone who is in a place where you could slow down and just kind of relax and enjoy the fruits of your labor in your lifetime, instead, you choose to follow this passion and continue to look long term at these issues and think about how you can contribute from the position that you've achieved in life. And so if I listen to that story, what I hear is some of the angles you're looking at are how do we impact the distribution of clinical trials and study women more closely? How do we look at access in Africa and question why it's different there than it is in Europe or the US? So for me, that's the inspiring part, that you're willing to take on a whole nother chapter in your life when you could just kind of kick back and relax. So maybe that's my curiosity. Why is that?
Yes, I've always been curious. I think what you were saying, those personal stories touching me. And now in this part of my, I won't say career, but learning journey, I won't say it's way back time, but it's feet forward. And if you realize, especially talking with my African colleagues, that only 1%, for example, of the global genomic database is African, while almost 20% of the world lives in Africa. And the median age in Africa is 18. And there is a difference also with regard to genomics in this population. And it intrigues me how to solve this, because there can be another type of breast cancer as well that needs another treatment. And you know, there are also, for example, cervical cancer, which appears in younger women. You can have an early diagnosis when you have the screening available. That's very easy. And once you have it in an early stage, it can be treated. But still, in Africa, there are many, many young women who die from cervical cancer. And yeah, I really wanted to solve that. I don't know how. And you have to partner, of course, with governments, because it can be logistic problems, you know, anything. But if you can play a role there somehow, or by inspiring others or supporting others who can do that, yeah, that really would fulfill me, you know. It's something I like that I want to do. And I think it was our chairman in a talk who said, you have to live once in a while in Africa for some time, because if you can live there, you can live anywhere. And there are so many powerful people there, but somehow it's still recognized as an underdeveloped area, and you have to inspire the people there also to explore and to be out there. And they are proud, but somehow they are proud among themselves, you know? And if I can play a role there, so I'm also part now of the African mentoring platform. So I hope to become a mentor for one of the colleagues there, just to inspire them and to support them to do their jobs, maybe inside Africa, but maybe also in another part of the world. I really embrace now our new ways of working in Roche as well. And I'm part of a diversity inclusion team as well. So I really believe that we need each other, not only in gender difference, but also cultural differences, religion difference, anything that can help us together to come to better solutions. You know, it's you have to learn it. And I must say, first time when I was in this multicultural environment, also some years ago, I was thinking, whoa, this is really different. But you really learn a lot from them as well. And in the end, you come to better solutions. I never think of this, of this, of this. And together, you can come to a better solution. And it inspires me, and you can inspire each other. Yeah, that's fantastic.
As I listen to you now, I'm reminded of some of the dialogues in the last months, and vividly one moment where you shared your horizon and the process of connecting to your professional and personal horizon. Am I right that that was a very pivotal moment for you?
Yeah. And I think that was really a shift, you know, because I really loved the program and connecting your passion, which was somewhere inside of me, and also connecting that with your strengths, and then see what you still can achieve. And although it is maybe in the third act, we used to say, but it gives so much inspiration, and that's what your next horizon and then can be. And I'm very passionate about it. And you still can learn a lot from others and challenge each other, inspire each other. Yeah.
Well, if I think about your background of your whole lifetime since a child being passionate and focused on women's health, and then I think about the platform you're standing on today, not only within the global Roche organization, but within all the networks that you have engaged in over the years, you'll be one of the ones to lead it.
Yet. I don't know where it will lead me to. Once it became obvious that this is my passion, I must say, every free moment, I do something around it. I try to read articles. I connect with groups working on that. And I'm part, or I just joined another personal board of a women's tribe. I'm an alumni for Future Women X, and they are a global tribe of courageous women inspiring each other and real female leaders to make a better future. And it's another network again, you know. You learn a lot still about yourself, but also your strengths and how to inspire others. And like, for example, the diversity and inclusion teams in Latin America I'm connected with. When you look at internet, you see so many connections. Even in my previous company where I worked for Organon in women's health, it was taken over years ago by two other companies, and now it's back. It's back in the Netherlands again, working for women's health. So yeah, you never know where where it leads to, but I'm still, you know, very open, and if I can be a kind of a leader, of course I will be that leader. But it's not to me to decide it.
Well, I think you already are. I think that the things you're doing now, the conversations you're having, the influence you're creating just by the discussions that I know you're having, I think you already are leading in some degree. And to what extent that will grow, you know, that'll be the fun thing to find out. One of the things I'm curious about is how much of this drive that you feel comes from your culture of being Dutch. My impression of Dutch are that you guys are such explorers, such voyagers, such global citizens. You're always on the move, and you're always, all the Dutch people I know are fascinated with the far reaches of the earth and making a difference on the planet. So I'm just curious on your perspective, is that a factor?
Yes, that could be. I think because of the fact that we are Dutch, we speak a language that no one else speaks. So we try to learn a lot and explore the world. We are travelers, that's for sure. We are negotiators. We traveled on the seas. I traveled a lot as well. I think it's the curiosity as well. So who is living in a particular country? And we also always want to learn the language, because that makes it easier to connect, because you are willing, you know, to have this communication. So and I think we are lucky that we get all the television in. We learn, it's mandatory to learn English at school. German is very easy for us. Even if you don't learn it, you can speak it, so to say. French can be more difficult, but for me, I'm also learning Spanish now. I learned Portuguese for 2 years because I traveled a lot there. And I think making that connection and hearing the stories of all the people around the world, that's really what is, I think, in our genes as Dutch people. Yeah.
So it sounds to me like, Monique, all of the forces are coming together for you in terms of where you are professionally in life, the platform you're standing on, the decades of experience in women's health, the openness to the emerging leadership style that fits your strength and your power. So it feels to me like this next ambition, this next horizon that you have, this is your time now. And I'm excited for how intentional you are about going after it.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to it. As I said, somehow it's in my mind every day. And having these discussions with my colleagues in all the other areas, and really hearing the stories, you know. And we're talking about patient centricity here. So it's also deep listening to your customers, to your patients, observe them without judging them. And yeah, that's really what fascinates me. And yeah, if I can do something around women's health and helping creating a world where we are all seen as equal persons and with equal health outcomes, yeah, that will make a whole difference.
And if someone hearing this podcast has a similar passion and a similar horizon for women's health and equality, how would they get started or how could they contribute?
Yeah, it's like I'm doing now, connecting with others and see where you contribute in your own environment. So in my job, I try to contribute wherever I can. For example, being in this diversity and inclusion teams, setting up the trials in discussion with the customers, partnering with others to make it happen, but also seeing what is going on in the world. There are many groups now working on equality in women's health. And yeah, if you can contribute there as well, I think it's a first step.
Wonderful.
Monique, you're a master of using language. I don't know if it's conscious or unconscious, but in Live With Intent, one of the principles we've been researching, publishing, and working with for over 20 years now is the principle of language, right? That language creates reality, that, you know, by the language that we carefully select, we basically select our destiny and we select our pathway. How does language and mindset connect for you in your work, or how has it done so for you?
Yeah. Maybe it's unconsciousness. I like language. As I said, I like the different languages as well. And the expression by words is very important for me. Although also English is not my native language. Sometimes I think, I cannot really, you know, convey the message like I want it to have, because it's not my native language and I miss some words. But I think it's important. You can really make a difference by using the right language to do with mindset. So it's also listening to others and really listening to the words, but I'm also always really observing the other and see what is really meant here. What is this person feeling? What do I sense? So it's really very important to me.
Imagine you are standing in a large crowd full of the people you worked with in Asia, in Africa, and there is the Monique that still has the rollerblades in her hands on the one hand, and there is the Monique with all her ability and her positive seniority and experience, right, on how to use language. What is the one sentence you would give that crowd?
Follow your passion.
Well, if you look at your LinkedIn picture, right, where it says that you're advancing women's health and power, you are an example of health and power in your life and also in the way that you present your passion. So, wow, what a sentence, right? And what a way to put that into language. And your passion is to make a difference in the lives of these women and this women health topics in order to make a more equal world and create better opportunities and access for them.
Yes. Yes, that's definitely my passion. And yeah, combining my strengths and maybe also the language, connecting people, partnering with maybe new stakeholders who can also make this happen, can make the difference, can advance women's health. Yeah, that would be wonderful, of course. So because I really believe that we have to do it together, you know, with the whole diversity. And if we have that passion to really make a difference, we can make this happen.
I believe.
Well, what a great way to put a button or a connection to these connected topics that make a difference in the world, in healthcare, in mindset, in leadership, but also in life in general, right? Thank you for helping us understand what it takes to follow our passion and doing so by being a great force for contribution like you are. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Monique. You're an inspiration to many, I know.
Well, thank you for this opportunity to share this passion in this podcast. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Our delight.
Now let's turn to Thomas and Justin for a brief reflection on today's discussion.
Justin, I mean, as I said in the interview already, what an example of health and power Monique is. She radiates energy. She radiates that passion that she's talking about. It's like at times we teach, hey, there's a difference between people that give energy and people that take energy. I mean, in Monique's world, that difference doesn't exist, right?
She's not afraid to have fun. She expects to have fun. And in my experience with her, it's so relaxing for anybody in the environment, in the topic or in the meeting, that with her, people can just be themselves. They can be relaxed. They can make it enjoyable and fun. It's not this heavy, difficult, even though the topics are heavy and difficult, the experience in working with Monique is not heavy. It's all forward moving fun.
Absolutely. To all of our listeners, thank you for listening. Our desire is to explore and contribute to the future of healthcare by applying the principles of Live with Intent.
For more information on the future of healthcare, Live with Intent, go to www.livewithintent.eu. This podcast was produced by Madeline May.